From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm union leader columnist John Clayton, and this is The Exchange. Those of us who are from New Hampshire are quite aware of the occasionally quirky people, places, and things that make the Granite State special. But every so often, it doesn't hurt to get an outsider's perspective. In this case, the outsider is Eric Jones, a Connecticut-born, Massachusetts-raised Iowa resident who's the author of a new book called New Hampshire Curiosities. His mission was to seek out, explore, and write about roadside oddities, outlandish characters, and some of the quaint but bizarre social rituals that make New Hampshire the most New Englandish of the New England states. After all, only in New Hampshire can you find the world's shortest parade and its longest covered bridge. Only in New Hampshire does the reverence for our official state fruit manifest itself in a three-day pumpkin festival, a medieval pumpkin-chucking catapult contest, and an honest-to-goodness open-water pumpkin regatta. And only in New Hampshire could a writer like Eric Jones explore the subtleties of roadside Trojan horses, a maple syrup sap-off, and a redstone rocket on the town common. Curious about what else is in the book? It's called New Hampshire Curiosities. That's the topic today on The Exchange. Join us at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. What are some of the more offbeat people, places, and events that you know about the Granite State? Do you see any similarities in the offbeat things that Eric Jones might include in his book that may reflect the New Hampshire lifestyle? That's what we'll be talking about today. Joining us from a studio in Iowa City, Iowa, Eric Jones, writer and author of New Hampshire Curiosities, Quirky Characters, Roadside Oddities, and Other Offbeat Stuff. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Tom.
It's good to have you with us. I've been reading through the book, and I have a feeling that you may have a bestseller on your hands up here in the Granite State, which has to be good news for you.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Now, New Hampshire Curiosities is basically a travel guide, and you've traveled an interesting career path. Tell us about a few of your other jobs that may have preceded your career as a writer.
Yeah, actually, one of the ways that I felt at home in New Hampshire was that a lot of the people I ran into had similar kind of career paths to me, or at least in terms of how many jobs and different things they did to make ends meet. But I've worked by everything from soccer coach, high school English teacher, household mover. I've worked as a nursing assistant. I've worked as a veterinary assistant. So I've done pretty much everything to keep a roof over my head.
And writing, again, is your, I guess, your avocation at the moment as opposed to your vocation. But New Hampshire Curiosities, published by Globe Pequot Press, it's part of a national series in which each state will be examined for its oddities and quirks. And, again, the charge before you, as a fellow living in Iowa, to come to New Hampshire must have required a little help from some locals here in the Granite State.
Yeah, that was actually one of the most enjoyable things about doing a travel book is that you're really you're lost without the help of people who know the terrain and who have a familiarity that you couldn't possibly hope to have. And actually, it's one of the sort of anxieties, but also the things that I'm going to enjoy hearing about on the program today is I'm sure there's going to be so many things from around the state that I haven't run across and haven't heard of, so there are huge gaps in my knowledge about all that's weird and wacky in the state. So I'm excited to hear guests share some of their own.
Yeah, well, from my own experience, we refer to those as the feared and dreaded errors of omission. and certainly our listeners will be able to help fill in any blanks that may have happened. How much time did you spend in New Hampshire to do your research?
Well, I actually lived in New Hampshire for, I lived sort of in between Portland, Maine and New Hampshire for about a year and a half. Lived with my brother in Stratford and then commuted to where my girlfriend lived in Portland, Maine. And then I spent about 7 months on the book and traveled probably somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 miles around the state.
That's not easy to do in a small state like New Hampshire.
No. Actually, one reason for the high mileage, I actually took a trip up to the North Country to do a bunch of pictures, and I did about a 500-600 mile run in a day, which is a lot of miles. And I came to the end of the day, and I actually ended up losing the film and driving over it. So about a week later, I went back and did the same 600-mile trek. So I did some backtracking.
Because in addition to the writing, you also took most of the photographs in the book.
Yeah, a good share of them.
And photography is not number one on your list of skills, I understand.
No, you could probably tell from the pictures.
Well, if you're going to talk about the pictures, we have to talk about the cover photograph. It's a landmark that's familiar to most of us who've been in New Hampshire for a long time. But if you weren't familiar with this New Hampshire roadside oddity, you might think you were reading a book about perhaps the Peloponnesian Wars, because on the cover of the book is a Trojan horse. Tell us about the horse.
The horse actually is one of the things that happens when you're researching a book is sometimes certain research comes in a little too late to be included in the book, sort of as the editing process moves forward. But the horse is actually on Route 4, and it was actually on my kind of commute into Concord from Stratford. And it's on the north side of the road, and you might miss it if you're not looking for it, but it stands pretty tall, definitely over head height, probably 8-10 feet tall. And it was built by a man whose son I ended up talking to as a protest of U.S. involvement with the U.N. Mm-hmm. From my understanding, the horse originally had crosses around it with the names of different Eastern European, Soviet bloc countries, Latvia and Estonia, and sort of surrounding it. And so it was really a political kind of protest piece that was marched out into parades at times. It actually took a trip to Washington, D.C., and sat outside the Soviet embassy for a day or two, according to the Sun. And I guess they took a picture of a couple of Russian guards at the embassy standing beside the horse who didn't know that it was sort of a protest against sort of Soviet influence in the U.N., I suppose. But recently it's become less political, as most of us tend to do as we age and get a little more conservative, and now he just is a Trojan horse along the side of the road.
Hmm. Now, in addition to the Trojan horse, some of the other oddities, which you've grouped geographically, I should point out, from the North Country to the Merrimack Valley to obviously the Connecticut River Valley, could also be broken into categories and segments because you touch upon things that are gone, for example, things that are no longer here, some of the odd and unusual contests that take place in the Granite State. I'd say you devote a fair amount of time to produce. We are an agricultural state, after all. And then there is the simple notion of collectors. We in New Hampshire tend to be a state full of collectors. And I guess if someone were to claim that they had 10,000 frogs, not real frogs, but artificial frogs in North Stratford, that would qualify as a New Hampshire curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are a couple of other collections that I really love, too. There's a collection in Gilmanton that was wonderful for me to see. It was a collection of outboard motors, and it's not open to the public. It used to be, but it's not anymore. But you can actually still call. Mr. Carpenter runs it and go and visit. He's got hundreds of outboard motors and beautiful lined up all in a row, and the varieties of manufacturers and from 20, 50, 70 years ago. And there are a number of other collections, too, that some of which are no longer, you can no longer see. There's a guy with a TV collection. And but yeah, that's one way that quirkiness or weirdness seems to manifest itself. And people get interested in something and they begin to collect it, and then pretty soon there's no room in their houses. It's filled with frogs or outboard motors or TVs.
Or rocks. Allow me to interrupt, Eric, because one of the favorite passages in the book involves an annual event in the town of Gilsum, New Hampshire. It happens each summer. And if you don't mind, let me read an excerpt from your book. The headline in this one is, "I'll trade you my rock if you'll trade me yours." A Granite Stater who collects rocks is a bit like a Bedouin who collects sand. With so many samples underfoot, the collecting is easy. It's getting rid of the rocks that's the hard part. That's where the Gilsum Rock Swap and Mineral Show comes in. At the end of each June, for the last 40-plus years, about 8,000 rock fans, rock dealers, and rock swappers from all over the country come to the small village to buy, sell, and, of course, swap rocks of every size, shape, variety, and value. More than 70 dealers and swappers spread out their material wares on the grounds of the Gilsum Elementary School, and rock hounds from around the country buy and swap everything from quartz, geodes, to fossils, to fancy jewelry. Samples range from the newly found and rough cut to the polished, high-quality, semi-precious stones. In addition to loads of rocks and minerals, the Gilsum Rock Swap and Mineral Show features lots of good eating. That's a pretty typical thing in New Hampshire, with lemonade, a bake sale, chicken barbecue. You had a lot of fun with the writing, obviously, Eric, by using a phrase like, a Granite Stater who collects rocks is a bit like a Bedouin who collects sand.
Yeah, one of the things that I was worried about with the book was that I felt like I could fill it up with stories about rocks. And so I felt like I needed to have a limit, because it really did seem like New Hampshire, people in New Hampshire, their propensity to see faces and feet and basically pretty much everything in rocks, and then the preponderance of big rocks and glacial erratics, and it's almost as if that was the material that New Hampshire sort of went to work on with its imagination was granite.
And well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. The topic today in the exchange is New Hampshire curiosities. Writer Eric Jones touched the four corners of New Hampshire to find the most quirky, offbeat, and curious items in our state. On his travels, he learned about the annual Leif Erikson Parade, the garage completely shingled with license plates, and the tradition of square dancing around a gas pump in Randolph. Today on the exchange, we'll learn more about the curious people, places, and events our state has to offer. So we want to ask you, are there quirky things in your own town that you'd like to tell us about? What are some of the more offbeat and quirky people, places, and events that you know about in the Granite State? The number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Eric, in talking about rocks in New Hampshire, it's impossible to ignore our favorite long-lost rock, that being the Old Man of the Mountain, who deserves special mention in your book.
Yeah, and that was one that I felt like I couldn't avoid writing about, and yet it was already gone by the time that I actually lived for a time in New Hampshire. So I felt a little sheepish writing about it, since I didn't feel like, I had come to know the old man. I had only come to know him after his death. But I was fascinated by, mostly by the story of the people around the old man.
You were fascinated by our fascination with it.
Yeah, exactly.
But the folks who tended to the rock, the Nielsens, get special mention in your book.
Yeah, and, just the idea of them tending to the old man, this face that people could see up on the top of this 1,000-foot cliff, there was something kind of touching about it, sort of that they were the representatives of the entire state of New Hampshire caring for a symbol that that the whole state had come to love.
And you found that we are taking desperate measures to try to replace the Old Man of the Mountain with suitable substitutes around the state.
Yeah, one of the things that I found as I was doing the research was that there's an old man of pretty much everything. There's an old man of Winnipesaukee, old man of the shore on the Isles of Shoals, old man of the Cog Railway. And I thought that if you could find a suitable replacement for the old man to sort of step into the limelight, that he had sort of been overshadowing all these other old men, that it might serve to make the loss a little less profound.
And yet profound it is. 1-800-892-NHPR. That's 1-800-892-6477. Gail is on the line from Sanborn. Gail, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm wondering if Eric had included anything about the pest cemeteries in his book.
Now, you did say pest cemetery as opposed to pet cemetery.
That's right. P-E-S-T.
Eric? Did you hear about the pest cemetery?
No, not at all.
Well, that's...
I would love to hear more about it, though.
I'm not a native. I'm sure that some of the natives could tell more about them, but apparently it was where lunatics and other pests of the communities were buried. And I know there is a pest cemetery in Guilford. I don't know what other communities have them.
Well, along that line in the Lakes region, one mention in your book, Eric, from the town of Alton, there's a four-legged creature who's buried in the town cemetery. Major Tom's horse, as I recall.
Right. That was one that I only came across because I happened to visit on the same day that the historical museum is open. It's only open one day a week, at least it was as of a year and a half ago. And I walked in, and as I did almost everywhere I went, I asked the woman there what was weird or odd or unique about the town. And she went through a bunch of things, and then after about a half an hour of talking, she sort of offhandedly said, "Oh, and of course we have old Tom buried in the middle of the cemetery." And I said, "Wait a minute, you know, I've never heard about a horse buried in the middle of the cemetery." So I went, and sure enough, it was a pretty large plot surrounding old Tom's grave, who had served honorably, I guess, in the Civil War. And according to the story that the woman told me, it had originally been buried, allowed to be buried at the edge of the cemetery, and ended up in the middle as time passed by.
That's not the only dead thing that shows up in your book. Unfortunately, you had to address one of, the lost and lamented traditions in New Hampshire, which is no longer carried out, that being the roadkill auction. Explain to our listeners who may not be familiar with the roadkill auction what that tradition included.
Well, as I understood it, the roadkill auction, which no longer takes place, I think the last auction took place in 1997, in December of every year, the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department put on an auction to raise funds at White Farm in Concord. And basically, it was all the fur bearers that had been roadkill, except for, I think, elk and deer, or moose and deer, I'm sorry. Mm. And the creatures would be tagged and frozen until the auction, and they would be laid out at the auction and sold to the highest bidder.
And having covered that event in the past, it was as much of a treat to look at the people who came to the auction as it was to look at the critters that were being auctioned off. You dealt in many contests. I talked about how you put the book together geographically, but we could also break it down by categories. And one of the more fascinating ones for me involved the different contests that are held in New Hampshire, amongst them a lumberjack festival, which is held in Berlin every year.
Yeah, they have a beautiful sort of three-acre reconstruction of a logging camp, and it really looks authentic because it is authentic. They have everything from the mess hall to the cabins for the loggers, and they have the highlights of the event for me would be the log rolling competition. Where people actually, get a professional to show them how it's done, and then if they choose, they get to try it out.
Hmm. I should add that your description of the Lumberjack Festival, you took some extremely great latitude in terms of describing it. If you'll allow me again, let me do another quick reading. The festival gets underway with a logger's breakfast, which, as you might guess, consists of two rice cakes and some lightly scrambled egg whites with a nice low-fat goat cheese crumbled on top, along with a nice cafe mocha, perhaps 6 ounces of organic pomegranate nectar to wash it all down. No, wait, that's the Breakfast of the Yuppie Festival and competition held in Nashua. Clearly, you weren't afraid to have some fun in writing about some of our New Hampshire traditions, Eric.
Yeah, and that came out first because I was making the attempt to be funny, but also because it's clearly a point of tension, but also a point for a lot of humor in the state, where you do have these, what I saw was really two different cultures living really closely side by side in a lot of different places through the state. So I thought I'd have some fun, with the festival and with that tension between yuppies and lumberjacks.
And it does exist. So in addition to the Lumberjack Festival, obviously everyone's familiar with the Mud Bowl competition each year in North Conway. But you also stumbled upon something which, for lack of a better term, you dubbed the Maple Syrup Sap-Off. Tell us about that contest.
Yeah, it's actually an event that I wasn't able to get to. That was, with almost 190 entries in the book, I wasn't able to get to that many of the events. But it was is one of the ones that I would most want to go to. And it's basically a sap gathering competition held in Keene at the Stonewall Farm, which is a nonprofit education center, but also a working farm. And they, every spring, have a sap gathering contest with 18, 19, 20 teams of horses. And the sap gatherers basically are judged by how much sap they collect in a certain amount of time, how little they spill, and how well they control the horses. My understanding is that they actually, you know, in terms of leading the horses through the sap grove, they actually use voice commands. So people have said that it's as if they have kind of remote control for these sap sleds that move through the trees, and with voice commands, these huge horses kind of make their way through, and they gather the sap buckets. And at the end, people get to have ice cream with maple syrup on it.
So they combine the high-tech and the low-tech, horses and geographic, I guess, GPS devices to make it all come together.
Yeah, it sounds like a wonderful event.
Well, number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Talking with writer Eric Jones, author of a book called New Hampshire Curiosities. Give us a call and tell us what you think about the more offbeat and quirky stories of people, places, and events in New Hampshire. Also, tell us what you find about New Hampshire, indicating that we perhaps have more curious places and events than the average state, which clearly is what Eric has discovered. Another contest, the Snowless Snowmobile Races, which are a summertime event here in New Hampshire.
That was one of the towns that I had to put a limit on was Fremont. It just seems like there's a little bit more weirdness per square foot in Fremont than in other places. But that was one that I had to include. Phil Peterson's farm in Fremont becomes a snowless drag track for snowmobiles each fall on Columbus Day weekend. And they have drag races where four people on snowmobiles line up and tear off down the field, mud and grass flying at about 100 miles an hour. And then they also have, what really surprised me was, a water crossing where the snowmobiles actually cruise over water around a island and a pond in the middle of the field, and hopefully they don't sink. But it struck me that it's probably more a result of the fact that New Hampshire folks are so eager to get on their sleds that they'll do almost anything to get them out there and get them running.
Snow or no snow,
yeah.
Because they actually race the snowmobiles on grass as well. They have drag races.
Exactly.
I'd feel a little safer with a drag race on grass than perhaps over the open water in Fremont, which, for those of you who are listening, according to Eric Jones, is one of the quirkier communities here in New Hampshire. The topic is New Hampshire Curiosities. Our guest is writer Eric Jones, who touched on all the corners of New Hampshire to find the most quirky, offbeat, and curious items, events, people, and places in our state. He learned about the annual Leif Erikson Parade, the garage completely shingled with license plates, and the tradition of square dancing around a gas pump in Randolph. Today in the Exchange, we're talking about the most curious people, places, and events in our state. We'll take more of your calls after a short break. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. I'm Union Leader columnist John Clayton in for Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange from New Hampshire Public Radio.
Support for New Hampshire Public Radio comes from UR members, and support also comes from Irving Oil and Propane, a full-service company committed to providing New Englanders with warm, comfortable homes for over 30 years, online at irvingoil.com. And the 73rd Annual League of New Hampshire Craftsmen's Fair, today through August 13th at the Mount Sunapee Resort in Newbury. Information online at nhcrafts.org. More on New Hampshire's curiosities on The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio and at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, morning after analysis of several high-profile primary elections. Beautiful day across New Hampshire today. Mostly sunny skies, high temperatures mid-70s to lower 80s. It'll be partly cloudy tonight, lows tonight from the mid to upper 50s. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm union leader columnist John Clayton in for Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, Laura returns with a conversation about the political effects of the Iraq War, how public opinion of the war may affect the midterm elections. That's Thursday on The Exchange. Right now, we're talking about New Hampshire curiosities. Our guest from Iowa City, Iowa, is writer Eric Jones, who touched on every corner of New Hampshire to find the most quirky, offbeat, and curious items in our state. On his travels, he learned about the annual Leif Erikson Parade, the garage completely shingled with license plates, square dancing around a gas pump in Randolph. Today on The Exchange, we're learning more about the curious people, places, and things the Granite State has to offer. What are some of the more offbeat and quirky people, places, and events that you know about the Granite State? Are there quirky things in your own town that you'd like to tell us about? The number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Now, Eric, as someone who spends a lot of time in the Midwest, I'm wondering how New Hampshire folks may be different from folks in other parts of the country from your experience.
That's a good question, and actually, since we spoke yesterday, I've been thinking quite a bit about it, and I don't know if in terms of the things that I've been looking at, sort of oddities, unusual people, places, and events, the sort of quirkiness and kitschiness that kind of comes up, I feel like there isn't that much of a difference in terms of the strange things that you'll run across. I almost feel like weirdness is like creativity. There's sort of an equal store of it wherever you go. It just kind of manifests itself a little differently. I think one of the things that struck me about the difference between New Hampshire and Iowa, you know, both are rural states, and there's sort of agricultural base in both states. But it seemed just in sort of thinking about some of the quirkiness that I found in New Hampshire, the farms in Iowa, I don't think I had a single, I did a book on Iowa curiosities, and I don't think I had a single sort of farm entry in Iowa. You know, there's lots of working farms, huge acreage. And in New Hampshire, it seemed like a lot of quirkiness came from farms and farmers, in part because they had to do so many things to sort of survive, run a farm stand or have a sort of pumpkin sale in the fall and sort of drop customers to the farm. And so it seemed like quirkiness sort of arose in New Hampshire farms far more often than it did in Iowa.
And let's not forget the quirky folks in Fremont. 1-800-892-NHPR. That's 1-800-892-6477. Donna is on the line from Merrimack. Donna, good morning.
Good morning. I just had a question about relating to Fremont.
Yeah.
There was a band called the Shags that was from Fremont. And it's kind of a weird thing because I came across them when my cousin went to UNH. Somebody from Fremont had one of their albums. And when I lived in Boston, I actually knew a guy I worked with who was from Florida who met his girlfriend in Florida, and they both had the Shags album at the University of Florida, which was one of the weird things they thought they had in common. And it was also on David Letterman sort of as a gag Christmas gift of the year. And I also put one of their songs on my answering machine. It was a Halloween song, and I had about 75 calls, like hang-ups on my answering machine, and finally somebody said that they were from a telemarketing firm, and once they heard the message, they passed my number around, and some people knew who they were, and other people were just like kind of frightened when they left the message. But I just wondered if, he had any more information about them or had ever heard of them.
Well, tell us, Eric, what can you tell Donna about the Shags?
That is one of the entries from Fremont that made it into the book. And
we are at the Granite State. You know, we do rock, so we need a rock band in
here. Yeah, exactly. And the story is fascinating. They've actually, I actually spoke with a gentleman named Matthew Thomas in Fremont, who's the town historian. He's written a 1,000-plus page history of the town, and the Shags is one of the first things that he mentioned to me when I called him, and I ended up visiting a couple of times. And
it was three sisters, was it not?
Yeah, it was three sisters, Helen, Dot, and Betty Wiggin. And from 1968 to 1973, they played mostly at the Fremont Town Hall. And on a Saturday night, townsfolk, mostly teenagers, would gather, maybe 100 of them in the town hall, and the Wiggin sisters would play. And their father was, really encouraging them and pushing them to record and to be the next rock sensation. And if you do a web search for the Shags, you know, you're talking about what they sound like. It's virtually impossible to describe how unique they sound. They've been described as the best band of all time, according to some sources. Frank Zappa called them better than the Beatles. And they've been called the worst band of all time. So the sort of responses people have to them is pretty remarkable. There are songs about their lost cat, and the lyrics are just incredible. I would sing it for you if I didn't want to not torture people.
Please, the ratings are important here. Yeah. The show. The number is 1-800-892-NHPR. That's 1-800-892-6477. Damien is on the line from Manchester. Damien, good morning.
Hi, John. I remember as a kid seeing his bottle-shaped building down by Pine Island Pond, and you wrote something up about it, that there used to be a Moxie bottle at the park.
In Manchester? Yes, as a matter of fact. I believe that Eric could tell you a little bit about the former Moxie bottle and its current location. Eric?
Yeah, I actually don't know if it's been sort of rebuilt yet, but it was bought by a museum in Union, Maine, that was putting together a bunch of sort of Moxie memorabilia, and it was actually outside up until it was purchased, so it had gotten pretty decrepit, and they're actually going to rebuild it inside this museum in Union, Maine. And it's one of the curiosities I mentioned because I thought it was really unique and did seem to be a real part of New Hampshire, but had gotten stolen away and ended up in Maine.
It was actually a small summer cottage on the shores of Pine Island Pond in Manchester. Had originally been used as an entryway to Pine Island Park, an amusement park that's no longer in the city as well. But you're right, Moxie has adopted... Maine has adopted Moxie as its official state drink. So it has found a new home up there. And that's one of the many New Hampshire curiosities that Eric has included in his book. 1-800-892-NHPR. Jan is on the line from New Boston. Jan, go ahead.
Hi. I just wondered if Eric had heard or gotten into his book, The Yankee Siege in Greenfield, the guy with the trebuchet. Who throws pumpkins into the woods?
I did.
I know you laugh, but if you haven't seen it, you gotta go. It's every Saturday in October usually, and every 20 minutes they fire off another one. It's incredible.
Thank you, Jen. I laughed because I've read Eric's book. And Eric, tell us about the trebuchet in Greenfield.
The trebuchet is probably one of my favorite pumpkin-connected oddities, and it's actually a world champion. For those who don't know, I didn't know what a trebuchet was, but it's actually basically a giant catapult.
It's a catapult with lace curtains, is how I read it.
Yeah, exactly. And Steve Seeger, who runs Yankee Farmer, has one of the favorite things that I think in the book that people have said about weird things. He said, everyone should have something stupid in their lives, is what he said about his trebuchet. And he's actually, like a lot of people who sort of start with one curiosity, he's sort of expanded. So now he's got a giant mace that he drops from a crane onto a car now and then, if you're lucky enough to come on a day when he drops the mace on a car. And they take this down every year to what's called the World Championship Pumpkin Chunkin' Contest down in Delaware. And it's actually the world champion in the trebuchet category. It's thrown a pumpkin over or almost a third of a mile at this competition down in Delaware. So it's a world champion, and here right in New Hampshire.
We have so much of which to be proud. The book is New Hampshire Curiosities. Our guest is Eric Jones, touched every corner of New Hampshire in putting together a book that compiles the oddities and quirky characters that makes New Hampshire a special place. talking about pumpkins, we have a special fixation. It's our recently voted state fruit, and the Trebuchet is not the only place in which the pumpkin is celebrated.
Yeah, actually, I didn't know until just now, or at the beginning of the show, that it's a state fruit. That's great. One of the, I think my other favorite event would be the, Giant Pumpkin Regatta. And
that's in Goffstown?
In Goffstown, down the Piscataquag, and they basically take a 500, 600, 700 pound pumpkin and hollow it out, put sand in the bottom for ballast, and then get dressed up in crazy costumes, and they can decorate the pumpkin, and they put an electric trolling motor on the back, and down the river they go. And unfortunately, last year, because of the rains and flooding, they had to cancel the trip down the river, so I didn't get to see it. But if even in pictures, it's just outrageous to see someone standing inside a pumpkin, piling it down a river. It looks like great fun.
And, that, of course, Jim Boschman is one of the creators of that event. It will be coming up in October. And if you've never seen it on the Piscataqua River in Goffstown, you do want to check it out. Let's not overlook the Keene Pumpkin Festival, which has made entries into the Guinness World Book of Records for the largest number of jack-o'-lanterns in one place. And I guess we can't omit a cousin to the pumpkin, that being the Zucchini Festival each year that's held in Windham. So, yeah, a lot of produce shows up in Eric's book. The number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Jeff is on the line from where? Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. My parents used to take my brother and I camping in the North Country every summer as kids, and we would beg them to bring us to a gas station that had a two-headed calf stuffed that was displayed in the window. And I was wondering if Eric ever had mentioned it in his book.
Eric?
You know, I didn't run across that. I would love to know what gas station that was. There were a couple of natural history sort of themed museums in Dover. There's the Woodman Institute, and it's got a chick with four legs and, things that, like that that you're talking about, a two-headed snake. But I've never run across a two-headed calf connected to a gas station. I'd be really curious to find out where that was.
Well, I thought the two-headed snake was creepy enough for me right there. we talked earlier in the open about the square dance in Randolph that takes place around a gas pump. Now, that even in New Hampshire, that strikes me as a relative curiosity. Tell us about the Randolph event.
It takes place right on Route 2 in Randolph. The Lowe family runs the gas station there, and just by chance, according to the story they told me, just by chance, the event was first held there over 30 years ago, and it's basically exactly what it sounds like. They have a caller come, and they basically have a square dance right out by the mobile pumps. And the Lowe's say they cook whatever they catch out back, salmon, moose, venison, and everyone's welcome. It sounds like half the town comes out for it every year.
It wasn't originally planned to be around the gas pump, was it?
No, I guess it turned out they were having electrical problems in the hall where they were supposed to have it, and the Lowe's said, we'll have come out and we'll have it right out in the parking lot. And it's been there ever since.
And so a tradition is born. The number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Talking with Eric Jones about his book, New Hampshire Curiosities. Among the curious things you found, Eric, is a particular job that probably wouldn't exist in many places. New Hampshire has a couple of biologists who get paid to harass seagulls.
Yeah, I called it the title of the job, Gull Harasser. I think that doesn't appear on anyone's resume, but I like the idea that someone might get paid to basically harass gulls, since they do a lot of harassing of their own.
And this takes place on Seavey Island in the Isle of Shoals?
That's right. They wanted to New Hampshire Fishing, or Division of the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department, along with the Audubon Society and some other organizations, wanted to reintroduce terns to the Isles of Shoals, which had gotten pushed out by the gulls. And they've been really successful from, I think, seven nesting pairs. There are over 1,700 nesting pairs now. And a big part of that success, as I understand it, is a continuous human presence on Seavey Island, one of the Isles of Shoals, and they do everything from clap their hands, wave their arms, and just be generally annoying to gulls to make sure that the terns are able to continue to thrive there.
1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Sharon is on the line from Manchester. Sharon, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I don't know if Eric has it in his book or not. I haven't read the book, but in Derby, they have a bed race every year in June. They close off Main Street, and it's sponsored by the local organization, Kiwanis, JC's, whoever, I'm not even sure, but people make up beds, like regular beds from home, and put wheels on them and race them down the hill.
Eric?
I've never heard of that. That's fantastic.
So perhaps, Sharon, if there's a sequel in the works, the Derry Bed Race would certainly merit an entry in New Hampshire Curiosities. That's the title of Eric Jones' new book. Gil from Ware is calling. I beg your pardon. Gil is not with us. So, Eric, bed races, one of many races you've covered in New Hampshire. One of them just concluded a foot race up the auto road of Mount Washington. You found that to be rather odd.
Yeah. Mount Washington itself is a sort of, a New Hampshire curiosity. And it seems like around it that there's cropped up all sorts of unique events and, the foot race. I think there are three different races up Mount Washington, an auto race, foot race, bike race. And just thinking about racing up a mountain was enough to just sort of make me feel tired. So the idea of all these folks doing it was kind of impressive, but also I think it shows some oddity even itself undertaking it.
And of course, we also have the auto race up Mount Washington Auto Road, which I think would be a lot more interesting and meriting a curiosity, I guess, if all of the vehicles started at the same time. It'd be a lot more fun. Unfortunately, they stagger them and they have time races rather than having them all barrel up the mountain at the same time, which I think would be certainly a curiosity, especially the outcome. In addition to some of the more traditional museums you've discussed, like the New England Ski Museum, which is at Cannon Mountain, the Telephone Museum, the Family Camping Museum in Allenstown, I think is something that a lot of people, even in New Hampshire, don't know about.
There are actually a couple of museums, just across. They're just across the road from each other. And one of them is the Snowmobile Museum, and the other is the Museum of Family Camping. And so you can do them both in one shot. And they're sort of quirky and filled. The Snowmobile Museum is filled with sort of strange-looking contraptions from the 60s and 70s, and they actually have a Lombard log hauler, which is this huge contraption, which claimed to be the first contraption for traveling over the snow, which is originally intended to for logging purposes. And then the Museum of Family Camping has probably 8 or 9 different camping trailers out front from the 60s and 70s. And then inside, all sorts of camping equipment and quirky camping devices, like sticks for dingle sticks and things for cooking, and just a whole collection of kind of camping bric-a-brac.
And you also stumbled upon an informal museum of sorts in Hooksett. You stopped by the Merchants Automotive Group, and I understand you got a special tour.
I did. I actually got a great tour, and Stephen Singer, the owner, gave me a tour of his collection.
A collection of what?
Of Muhammad Ali memorabilia. Everything, and some of the most wonderful pieces are actually original art pieces. And there's an actual sculpture, life-size sculpture of Muhammad Ali in a ring. There are x-rays of his broken jaw, there's a couple of other original art pieces that are just great, and you get this wonderfully sort of love-inspired tour from someone who admires Ali not only as an athlete but as a humanitarian. And at the end, I was given the gift of a 14-year-old bag of Muhammad Ali popcorn, which I still have on my desk at home.
Is popcorn like wine? Does it get better with age?
I actually haven't even thought about opening it.
Now, you have very few souvenirs of the time you spent in New Hampshire, the Muhammad Ali popcorn being one. What else did you take away with you?
One of the things that I took away, one of the few things that I took away, was a couple of hand-carved spoons from a spoon carver in Contoocook named Dan Dustin, who is a wonderfully quirky, kind character, who invited me into his home and spent a couple of hours talking with me, showing his workshop. And it's actually, I'm glad you mentioned it, because the League of New Hampshire Craftsmen Sunapee Crafts Fair is going on right now.
Yes,
and that's,
yes, it is.
That's actually one of the two times during the year that he sells his spoons. The other is a fair in New York City. And I know for a fact, because I just received a card from him, that he is selling this year spoons from his, what I call his individual spoon retirement account, when he sort of makes his quota for the week or the month of spoons, hand-carved spoons that he carves from lilac wood and apple wood. He puts the best of them in his spoon retirement account, and I understand that this year he's selling some of those retirement account spoons, so you can get the best of the batch this year if you go to the Sunapee Craft Fair.
Well, we'll talk about that Sunapee Crafts Fair going on this weekend at Mount Sunapee. We've also received a call, just so you know, Eric, that the two-headed calf is located at a service station in Colebrook, New Hampshire. So next time you're back this way, you might want to head up to Colebrook and check out the two-headed calf. Jan is on the line from Warner. Jan, join us.
Hi. Hi. So I wouldn't call this an oddity. It's actually a really wonderful event that happens in Warner around Halloween with pumpkins. Again, with the pumpkins, but
again with the pumpkins.
The Corser family takes the pumpkins that they haven't sold. This is a local farm, and people from Warner carve them in really beautiful carvings, and then they set them out in their field and light them for 3 days right around Halloween, and people just drive out there and walk along and look at all the pumpkins, and it's just beautiful because it's very dark. There's no lights, and so it's just gorgeous.
It sounds almost eerie. Eric, have you noticed that there are these seasonal festivals in New Hampshire that really are woven into the fabric of our lives?
Yeah, and I'm glad you called and mentioned the Corser Farm, because it was one of the ones I included, not only because I understood that it was just a beautiful sight, these sort of pumpkins that the people from the community carved and then set out, and I'm told it's especially beautiful sort of after the crowds go 10 or 11, 12 o'clock at night to see them all in the field lit. But also, Jerry and Tim Corser, as a side job, like a lot of farmers have to have, are grave diggers. I'm not sure if they still do, but I know since the 70s they were asked to sort of help out a local undertaker who had gotten a backlog from the winter freeze, and since then that's one of their sort of occupations is grave diggers. And I thought it was a wonderful sort of event, but also a wonderfully kind of authentic event to have your farmers who grew your pumpkins to also be grave diggers on Halloween.
Hmm. You mentioned Dan Dustin and the Corsers. Obviously, you met a lot of interesting people here in New Hampshire. You had some local folks who actually helped you out in terms of getting acclimated to New Hampshire and in gathering material for the book. Who were some of your better volunteers in this case?
Oh, it seems like pretty much everyone I called was really helpful. Just in terms of sources, I spoke with and then utilized J. Dennis Robinson's site. SeacoastNewHampshire.com was a great resource. Matthew Thomas, the historian I mentioned out of Fremont, just went above and beyond in terms of the time and resources he shared with me. Folks who just on the street or town clerks were really helpful. Almost every town clerk that I spoke to would point me in some direction. Local newspaper folks that I would call. So it just everyone that I spoke to was willing to help me out. the challenge when you're talking about Odysseys, and probably for listeners thinking about Odysseys or Curiosities, is that a lot of things that I considered oddities, you know, locals really were so familiar with it, it didn't seem strange at all to them. So I would ask someone, and they might say a couple things, and I would mention something else, and they said, "Oh, that's not an oddity. You know, that's something I've known about all my life."
You mean everybody doesn't have a pumpkin tossing trebuchet in their backyard?
Yeah, exactly. Or we'd be 3 miles from the rocket on the Warner Town Square, and you know, they wouldn't mention it. It's been a part of their lives, so it doesn't even register as a curiosity.
Although the Josie Langmaid statue, no matter how you cut it, registers as an oddity in Pembroke.
Yeah, that was one that one of the sort of challenges in the book is that you know, going for a humorous, upbeat tone, the monument itself is to a murdered 17-year-old girl from Pembroke Academy. It's called the Murdered Maiden of Pembroke Academy.
Mm.
And there's a large monument that details her age and her death, and then it directs visitors to the monument to the place where her body was found, and then the place where her head was found, almost a quarter of a mile distant.
Now that is a New Hampshire curiosity, and that is the title of Eric Jones' book. Eric Jones, writer and author of New Hampshire Curiosities: Quirky Characters, Roadside Oddities, and Other Offbeat Stuff. Eric, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
You can continue the conversation by posting your comments on our website. The address is nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The producers are Ty Fraley and Brady Carlson. Our intern is Jason Michael. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. The executive producer of The Exchange is Keith Shields. And in for Laura Kanoy, I'm union leader columnist John Clayton.